We had one quote from an athlete that I won't forget. She was a softball player, and someone said, "Move your fat ass off the baseline." And when she got to home plate, she just thought, "Why am I here? Like, why am I putting myself, subjecting myself to this? This isn't fun." And dropped out, never went back to that sport. And she described herself as someone who was good. So again, this competence and appearance focus around the body is so integral to keeping girls feeling safe in their sport.
Welcome to Sport Intelligence, the Canadian Perspective podcast, where we'll give you an all-access pass to the inner workings of Canada's vibrant sports sector. I'm your host, Paula Baker, and today we're tackling a topic that maybe doesn't get enough attention: how body image affects athletic performance. You may have heard that over 600,000 Canadian adolescents drop out of sports each year, but did you know that girls are up to 6 times more likely than boys to quit? A lot of this comes down to body image concerns. Nearly half of adolescent girls say they don't feel confident in their bodies while playing sports. And this issue doesn't just stop at self-esteem. They're hyper-focusing on how they look, or what is called body surveillance, and it can actually interfere with their ability to perform. When athletes are worrying about how their uniform fits or comparing their bodies to teammates, their attention isn't fully on the game. When attention shifts to appearance, it impacts performance. To help us understand the science and her work on body surveillance, how it undermines athletes' motor skills and confidence, and why these factors are driving girls out of sports, is Dr. Catherine Sabiston, a professor at the University of Toronto in the Faculty of Kinesiology and Physical Education. Dr. Sabiston is the director of the Mental Health and Physical Activity Research Center, and she holds a Canada Research Chair in Physical Activity and Mental Health. Her work has been widely recognized and has led to key insights about how psychological factors impact athletes, particularly around body image. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us and lending us your expertise today.
Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
Now, Catherine, your research highlights something that doesn't get much attention: how focusing on one's body or body surveillance can affect athletic performance. Can you explain what body surveillance is and how it shows up in sport environments?
Absolutely. So body surveillance is a term that we use to describe attention that is placed on the body. So it is one's feelings that their body is being observed and watched. It's about looking at the cues to the body that draw attention on the body. And in the work that we do, we tend to focus on body surveillance as an indicator of body image that is prevalent in sport, because as we can expect or realize in sport, everything that we see, that we do, is in front of others. Many sports have types of uniforms that people wear, different types of equipment that bring attention to the body. Oftentimes when we're training, we're in environments that are drawing attention on the body because of the images that are on the walls or the pamphlets that you get. So everything that's involved in sport is, we tend to say, it's judgment-based, it's focused on the way we look.
And what initially drew you to the topic of body surveillance in sport, and why do you believe it's such a critical factor in athlete participation and performance?
Historically, my research has always been focused on body image more generally. The thoughts, the feelings, the behaviors that people do that are tied to their body or that focus on the body. And historically, that research has been focused in a number of different areas. So we do a lot of work around body-related emotions, for example, how people feel in terms of shame and guilt and envy and embarrassment and pride around their bodies. But when we started to look at that data, what kept coming through was this idea that there's actually this cue or this attention on the body that we're not capturing with these emotions. First of all, what do we call it? So we've come to the realization that it is body surveillance. And then we've also been able to now look at how do we draw attention on the body and what are the impacts of that attention on the body on a number of different sport-related outcomes. So before that, that historically, you know, our work has been focused on these very niche areas of body image, and body surveillance has culminated as this concept or factor that we feel is the true emanating factor around the body that impacts athletes in terms of their performance and their well-being in general.
One of the big findings from your research is that it can distract athletes from the actual task at hand. So whether it's shot, a pass, or sprinting, how exactly does this distraction happen, and what have you observed it doing to an athlete's performance?
first of all, we've been able to measure what does intention on the body look like. And so we've been able to do this in a number of different ways, both experimentally as well as in surveys. So there is a history of this concept of body surveillance that began in psychology research around objectification and this idea that drawing attention on the body, that our bodies are something that people look at and gaze at, and that this then impacts the way that we behave, the way that we feel, our perceptions of ourselves. And so that original research was focused on surveys. And then we wanted to look at other types of research that's been done to look at the way that attention has been drawn on the body. And most of this research has been done originally with women. So looking at if women perform a task wearing a giant sweater versus a bathing suit, do they perform a math test any differently? Our initial research showed that women wearing an oversized sweater performed better on a math test than when they were wearing a swimsuit. So it showed if you were comfortable with your body and in comfortable clothing, you perform better on something like a math test. Now, that type of research has been replicated in a number of different settings with women looking at if they're wearing tight clothing, do they throw a baseball any differently than if they're wearing loose clothing? So we took the concept of this research and looked at loose and concealing versus tight and revealing clothing. And what we found was that women wearing the tight and revealing clothing performed worse. They made more errors. They had different types of judgments on these tasks, and they were less risky in terms of the task that we did when we had them use a computer-based task. So it showed that drawing attention on the body impacts your performance. And in our labs, I work with a colleague in motor control and learning to be able to look at some of these tasks that are rudimentary or foundational to sport, but that are not in the sport space themselves. So we do a lot of computer-based tasks, drawing attention on the body in a number of different ways. From that research, we then started to think, how else can we draw attention on the body? We've then moved into a space where we look at whether people are identifying with an embarrassing time in their lives around their bodies versus a pride time in their lives around their bodies. And they think about that time, they write about it, and then we have them do a task on the computer again. And so in this study, which was funded by CERC as our next phase of our research, we found that men and women perform differently when they think about embarrassing tasks versus pride tasks around their bodies. And specifically, men in the early phases perform worse, but women have a tendency to perform much worse longer. So the retention effects of this task are different for men and women, but both are impacted by drawing attention on the body. So this task then shows that even recalling times in which you had a negative body focus experience does impact performance outcomes.
Have you done anything that's been sport specific? How does that play in there?
What we've done is mostly computer-based tasks that are foundational to sport. So risk-taking, attention, reaction time, movement time. It's important to then have the validity of a lab-based study where we can say these things are impacting these foundational sport skills. And then the next phase of our research would then move to what we would call ecological validity, or in the actual sport spaces themselves, do we see these same effects? And so we've been able to do that with survey research, but not experimental as of now. It's really hard to draw attention on the body in an experiment without it being uncomfortable. There's so many other psychological factors that come into play when you're drawing attention on the body that makes it hard to do these experiments in a sports space specifically, but we're inching our way there to say there's a consistent link with kids and with adults and with men and with women. So now we're starting to think we need to move into the actual sports spaces. And we've done that with survey data so we can say, yes, there is an effect of body-focused shame and body surveillance on attention in sport with adolescent girls, for example. Over time, we found looking at body surveillance predicted higher levels of shame, higher levels of guilt, and decreases in pride over time in adolescent girl athletes.
Okay, and you've touched on it a little bit already, but were you surprised by any of the gender differences you observed in the way body surveillance impacts adaptation and motor learning between boys and girls or men and women?
Surprised in that theoretically, not necessarily a gender-based difference that we would expect. However, what we do find is for men, there was this immediate effect looking at motor performance. So men who wrote about an embarrassing experience around their bodies tended to perform worse immediately on the task. And then women tended to perform worse later on. So this retention of the task or this adaptation was affected. And what one of the things that I consider in thinking through these findings is that men are not used to thinking about their bodies and writing about their bodies. And women are socialized to have this attention always on the bodies. It's almost like a status quo for women. Whereas for men, it's quite a challenge to think about and write about emotions tied to their bodies. And so that is probably why we saw the effects that we did for men and not for women, because from a gender perspective, we're socialized differently. We behave differently, and women just tend to focus more on their bodies in general than men do. And it's good that we can test these gender differences and to think about the underpinnings of why this might be, especially when we then take these findings and think about the implications in sport, for example, and the ways in which these results can be used by coaches and by athletes and parents in the youth sports space to be able to think about what are the nuances of boys and men's sport versus girls and women's sport, and how do we tailor messaging and strategies differently?
Your research shows that girls are more likely to drop out of sports with body image being a significant factor, but I wonder if you can dive into it a little bit deeper on how body image affects participation, in particularly for girls.
Absolutely. Historically, we've heard that body image is one of these factors that impacts girls' sport participation. And we've been able to test these effects longitudinally as well as cross-sectionally to look at what is it about body image that relates to the sport space for girls specifically. And what we tend to see is that it is this idea that drawing attention on the body, that this constant attention, judgment, feelings of lack of competence, all of those pieces are tied to body image for girls. And so we do see that there is a dropout in some of our work longitudinally. We see that in one study that we followed over 500 adolescent girls over time, by 5 years later, 72% of them of our sample had dropped out of sport.
That's a lot. And do you take an exit as to why they've dropped out of sport?
When we look at the significant predictors that we've studied, things like weight commentary, body talk, body-related emotions are all factors that are predicting higher dropout for girls.
I wish my legs were as toned as hers.
I don't look like the girls in the fitness ads.
She looks so strong. I just look chubby.
I wish I had a flat stomach like hers.
Her uniform fits her perfectly, and mine feels so tight.
And so it's consistent, unfortunately, with, you know, longstanding research in this area that shows that girls are dropping out because of this heightened attention on the body. The fact that sport is not traditionally a space for body diverse youth. If you're in a heavier body, you're not likely to be seen on the playing field or on the court or in the pool. And so these spaces need to become more body diverse in order to allow girls of all body types to feel like they fit in, especially when we also layer on puberty, which developmentally changes girls' bodies for the worse because they're drawn towards these idealized bodies that you look a certain way, and puberty basically adds fat and adds dimensionality to a girl's body that certainly impacts the way that they feel and may not impact the way that they perform in ways that were once traditionally thought. There's so much more research that has to be done in this space, but generally speaking, our work shows that there's significant body talk, there's significant weight commentary that come at these athletes from all angles. We hear it from spectators, we hear it from teammates, we hear it from coaches. When we interviewed referees and officials in girls' sport, we heard that the referees and the officials hear from the sidelines people yelling comments about the way that people look. We also heard that the female officials and referees also got attention and commentary about the way that they look and the way that they were performing as referees and officials.
There's absolutely no safety for this anywhere for women or girls.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It just makes it not a place where people wanted to be. And I mean, we had one quote from an athlete that I won't forget. She was a softball player and someone said, "Move your fat ass off the baseline." And when she got to home plate, she just thought, "Why am I here? Like, why am I putting myself, subjecting myself to this? This isn't fun." And dropped out. never went back to that sport. And she described herself as someone who was good. So again, this competence and appearance focus around the body is so integral to keeping girls feeling safe in their sport.
You're listening to Sport Intelligence, the Canadian Perspective podcast, where we're exploring the hidden dynamics that drive sport in Canada. Today, we're joined by Dr. Catherine Sabiston, professor at the University of Toronto and expert in the impact of body image on sport performance. Catherine is sharing her research on how body surveillance can negatively affect athletes' minds and movements and what this means for the future of sport participation, especially for girls and women. I know you also mentioned in your study the public commentary about the athletes, but then also the media coverage around people like Simone Biles or Ilona Marr and how it can impact their performances. How does this kind of attention on body image trickle down from these elite athletes to everyday sport participants? Do you hear anything about that or see an impact that way?
What we do see is it's pretty much a guarantee that every 4 years or every 2 years, depending on the sport that we're following, there's always a focus on body-related comments in some way, shape, or form. And at these Summer Olympics, it was Simone Biles' hair. We see them every time that there's an Olympic Games. Now with social media, it's more prevalent than ever to see these comments about the way that someone looks and how they interact with the fans and with the media around those kinds of comments. Social media provides athletes with an opportunity to at least state and acknowledge these kinds of comments, but it's taking energy away from the performance itself. And it's good to have these role models that are speaking about the challenges around the comments around how they look, but the very fact that we're focusing on them is not a good thing. It's not identifying and demonstrating this celebration of differences in any way in sport, because we're still talking about them. There's still these comments that keep coming up again and again about very specific aspects of how someone looks. And this is at the elite level, the highest level of sport participation. And so for young girls watching Simone Biles, they think, well, why would I even bother going to sport? If everybody's going to focus on my hair, I don't want to be out there, you know? And so it could be a detriment. It could stop people from participating as well.
Well, and I look at Ilona Marr, who's the female U.S. rugby player, and she was on social media a lot in the lead up to and during the games in really respectful responses, particularly. Here she is in one of her Instagram reels in July responding to the comment, "I bet that person has a 30% BMI.
Hi, thank you for this comment. I think you were trying to roast me, but this is actually a fact. I do have a BMI of 30. Well, 29.3 to be more exact. I've been considered overweight my whole life. In middle school, elementary school, high school, I was always considered overweight. I remember vividly one time in high school, I had to turn in a physical to the office, and right at the bottom of the page, it said overweight. And I was so embarrassed to turn that in and to have that written there. So my whole life I've been this way. I chatted with my dietitian because I go off of, you know, facts and not just what pops up here, you know, like you do. And we talked about BMI, and we talked about how it really isn't helpful for athletes. BMI doesn't tell you much. It just tells you what your height and weight and what that equals. I've said it before, I'm 5'10", 200 pounds. And I have about, and this is an estimate, but about 170 pounds of lean mass on me. Do that math in your head. You probably can't. That's pretty crazy, right? And that BMI doesn't really tell you what I can do. It doesn't tell you what I do on the field, how fit I am. It's just a couple numbers put together. It doesn't tell you how much muscle I have or anything like that.
So hearing that, it's like you said, in one way it's, oh, body positive, and that's awesome. But she's focusing on what's being said about her instead of being 100% focused on her sport. And thank gosh that girl's obviously a strong constitution inwardly, that she can come out and say those things and feel confident about herself, or at least appear to feel confident about herself.
And you just don't know. I think that the value of the work that we're trying to do experimentally is to show that even though outwardly that conversation can happen, and it's so important to have these body positive role models and commentary that comes through in the media, but it's likely to be having a detriment on performance. And not only performance, but what we're trying to also show is that if attention is on the body, then you're more likely to get hurt. Your injury risk is higher. Your well-being is hampered. Your quality of life, your mental health, all of these aspects are not in your favor when the attention is so focused on your body and not on your performance. And so as we continue to try to show this, the impact of this attention on the body is so much more than just a social media post. It's affecting people's performance. And of course, you could say, well, it didn't because they got gold or because they got silver. They're still at the highest level, but it doesn't mean that they perform their best outside of that like number or the outcome of the game that they won. Sport is more than just the outcome, right? It's about the quality experience, and that quality experience has likely been affected for all of these athletes.
Thanks for saying that, because I think that's incredibly important, because I think that is when you see the end goal of the U.S. Olympic team for rugby women's. And then you look at Simone Biles, because I think so many people are results and goal oriented that they forget about the journey and the process thereof. So thanks for saying that. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And again, you did touch on this a little bit earlier, but just want to go a little bit deeper. But coaches and sports administrators play a pretty crucial role in creating the environment that athletes train in. So based on your findings, what advice would you give to sport leaders to reduce the body focus cues and improve an athlete's experience?
Yeah, where do I begin? Obviously, it starts from really having an awareness and an openness to learn. Body image is one of these factors that I always say is sort of like a fluffy measure, right? Like people hear body image and think, oh, that's not really that important. And what we're trying to do is show how absolute important it is. And so by identifying that you're willing to be aware of the impact of body image, what body image is, and when we talk about body image, people inherently link body image to things like eating disorders. And yes, there's a crucial link there, but there's so much more than eating disorders. It impacts all aspects of life. It impacts the way people relate to others. It impacts people's quality of life, their mental health, their physical health, injury risk, all kinds of aspects that performance that we talked about. And so one of the first things is to build an awareness and a knowledge base around what body image is. And obviously removing weight commentary and body talk from people's discourse in general is crucial. Being able to identify what people are doing without a focus on how their body looks is critical. Also though, engaging in conversations. So there's many times when we hear about athletes going up and talking to their coach and saying, I'm having a bad day, or I feel really heavy today, or those conversations get stopped. It's like, okay, well, that's great, but let's move on to this. And instead, we want to help coaches engage in that conversation, actually talk to the athlete and find out why they feel the way they do, why they think of their bodies the way they do. The more equipped that coaches can be to have those conversations, the better, because then athletes feel heard. And it's critical to feel heard as an athlete and to feel like your coach has your back in this area that's so prominent in sport. I mean, bodies are, again, on display and judged and critiqued. You're in change rooms, you're in the field, you're in the pitch, you're in the pool. All of these aspects are important. The other key thing is trying to draw a good relationship with your athletes as a coach and being able to let the athletes feel safe. Having that conversation with you is important, because oftentimes athletes won't even feel like it's something that coaches have an interest in or an ability to talk about. So that's important as well. And it goes with the entire training staff, making sure that everyone is aware of and knowledgeable on body-related talk and commentary, making sure to reduce the comments and the comparisons that exist in your sport, making sure that the environments in which you're training as well as competing are conducive to body diversity. Just an example from some of our interview research where we had a young girl athlete say that they didn't even think about the way that their body looked when they were playing their sport until the season changed and they were training indoors.
My boobs look too big in my uniform.
I feel like my shorts are riding up.
My thighs look huge in these shorts.
I look so out of shape.
And their team went and trained in an indoor facility that was a gym that had pictures of these idealized bodies everywhere. And it changed the way that these girls thought about their body because of the images and the posters that were present in the training space, not the pitch where they were used to training. And so things like that are pretty observable factors that impact people's body image and the way that they see themselves. So again, just being mindful and intentional about the spaces that you choose to train in, and then making sure that if you're especially in youth sport, the uniforms are an important and such a contentious issue for athletes and girls specifically around being able to choose comfortable fitting uniforms. So as a coach and as an administrator, making sure that the manufacturers that you're working with are giving you lots of different sizes and styles of uniforms, because these girls need to feel comfortable. If the uniform is causing them a tension on their body, they're not performing at their best. And from the work that we've done with pre-adolescent girls is that their bodies might change 3 times in a season based on puberty. So not only making sure you have one uniform for 1 season or 2 seasons, but making sure that you have enough uniforms that girls can grab what they need when they need it. Oftentimes too, now we're talking more about menstruation and about girls who have their periods and what those uniforms look like, because that can also impact their body image tremendously around their comfort of performing.
Absolutely, Catherine. Actually, the 2024 Canadian Women in Sport Rally Report highlights exactly what you're saying, the importance of offering options that girls can choose from, including a range of styles, sizes, and accommodations for cultural and religious needs as it relates to uniforms. And the report also notes that uniform design becomes even more vital during menstruation, which we were saying. And they found that nearly 1 in 5 girls aged 13 to 18 report that uniforms can negatively impact their experience. And considering these factors, it can ultimately help them feel more at ease and enable them to focus on enjoying and excelling in their sport. And so it's not that males or young boys are immune to this, but it sounds like it's definitely skewing way more towards young girls and women. What's been your findings there as it relates to what impacts them? Because I'm assuming it's quite different than girls.
It is quite different, obviously. Much more research on girls and women than boys and men, and gender diverse youth and individuals. We're still drawing from maybe antiquated approaches to this gender bias around body image, because what we hear when boys and men are studied or gender diverse individuals, there are tremendous body image challenges across the spectrum of gender. And maybe the factors are different and the way that they relate to and impact individuals is different. So there's a lot less known about boys and men and gender diverse youth. But what I can say from the research that we have done and the theories that support it is that there's no reason why these relationships wouldn't exist across the spectrum of gender, which means that generally speaking, body image imparts such a challenge to sport performance. And yes, if you think historically, boys are going to be more impacted by muscularity-based factors versus fat-based factors that girls tend to be. But it's not always the case either. There's many, many boys who worry about fatness and body size in a similar way. We need more research. We're starting to do more research. It's not only a girl's issue in sport, but we're only just starting in this space.
When you mentioned you did that longitudinal study and you had 72% of the females drop out, what would be the comparison for boys? Is there as high dropout rate due to body surveillance or body image issues?
We don't know. I mean, longitudinal research has not at the forefront of research in sport. So it is starting for sure. And we do have better data every day. So I don't know the comparison other than to know that the traditional metrics suggest that girls during adolescence drop out at a rate between 2 and 6 times higher than for boys. And so there are certainly, by the end of that 5-year study that we did with girls, there would be far less boys who would have dropped out of sport than for the girls, but we don't have those metrics to say for sure. And again, I would say that these trends are probably going to shift now with differences in opportunities for girls that are now look very different than they did, you know, even a decade ago, which is great. So as more girls continue to have opportunities to start sports, to play different types of sports than they were once able to, we might see that now they can play sports that they actually like or that they actually want to do, and see what kind of impact the historical nature of this advancements in sport opportunity has for girls.
Have you seen anything change within sport, like a team or an organization that has listened to you regarding the uniforms, any of these policy changes. Can you cite any positive examples so far?
Not insofar as actual enactment of any of these strategies come through. There's no case studies that I can put my finger on and say, yes, here's an example of what it looks like when things are done well in this space. Because this is all very new, even to us. It's probably in the last couple of years have we really drawn attention on body image.
How do you think this impacts their psychological well-being and career longevity in sport?
We have stories where some athletes will say, I didn't really have body image issues until I left my sport. And now they're so extreme that they are the number one driving force of poor mental health and quality of life because their bodies change. They're so focused on performance and training to a level that they needed to be at when they were playing their sport, that now when they don't have the coaches and they don't have the training schedules that they once had, their bodies are shifting and they're not used to it. They don't have the support around them to manage it. And this whole identity of an athlete aspect, there's a whole host of challenges around athlete identity in post-retirement.
Have you seen any factors like race or socioeconomic status or sexual orientation intersecting with body image issues in sports at all?
Absolutely. All of identity factors really play a role in terms of the way people experience body image. We've talked about gender as one and race as another. Social class, ability or disability status are all factors that play a role in the ways in which people have relationships with their bodies and that those relationships with their bodies impacts their sport performance. Individuals from intersecting identities might experience body image challenges differently. The ways in which their body, the attention on their body is impacting their sport seems to be similar. And so we're starting in this space. We're looking at the ways in which youth relationships with their bodies across a number of different identity factors. And what we're seeing is that, yes, these experiences might be different, but the impact on these outcomes that we've talked about, performance and quality experiences, seems quite stable.
What steps can athletes themselves take to cope with body surveillance and focus more on their sport performance rather than how they look? Are there any strategies that you've seen work particularly well?
To be honest, the main aspects around body-focused cues and attention is to have a positive relationship with the way the body functions. And so putting the attention away from how one looks and on how one performs. And we tend to miss that part when we're talking about body image because we tend to focus on appearance. But most of the time, what we've seen work really well is tied to self-compassion. So following strategies to be able to feel positive about oneself and compassionate for oneself and body. Also, performing sport and training environments that focus on embodiment, that focus on how you feel versus how you look. Wearing clothes that are comfortable rather than not. Focus on you and your own self-care. Also, as part of a team, whether you're in an individual sport or a team sport, you're usually around others. So being that positive role model, not making comments about other people's bodies, not driving comparisons in the change room around body talk, and being an advocate of body diversity is critical for sport because the more that we can focus on ensuring that anyone can start and stay in sport, the better the whole system will be.
Catherine, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us today. Your research sheds light on an issue that has huge implications for athletes of all levels. And I think our listeners will walk away with a much deeper understanding of how body surveillance can impact sport performance. It's clear that changes need to be made in how we talk about and design sport environments to help athletes focus on what really matters, what their bodies can do, not how they look. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And to our listeners, I want to thank you for joining us as we take a closer look at the hidden dynamics shaping Canadian sport. This conversation is brought to you by CERC, Canada's National Sport Information Resource Centre. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to Sport Intelligence, The Canadian Perspective, and leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments, do not hesitate to reach out to us on social media at CERC_Canada on Instagram or at CERC Tweets on X. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.